Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to another episode of SpondyCast. Today, we are talking with Derek Sherlock. He is a self-coached world championship level power lifter in his 60s, despite having ankylosing spondylitis since childhood. He lifts in the master's category appropriate to his age in the International Powerlifting League and United States Powerlifting Association. Derek was the IPL's world champion in 2021 in his category, and he has broken four world records, two of which he still holds, and he often actively fundraises through Raising the Bar for the Spondylitis Association of America, and we're going to talk a bit about his story today. Derek, welcome to SpondyCast.
Well, thank you, and hello.
How are you today?
Actually, I'm feeling really good today.
Good. I like those days. So I kind of want to ask you first, you were diagnosed as a child, which is often not the case, but how was your journey growing up with ankylosing spondylitis, and how do you think it's impacted your life, if you're able to say that?
Well, I was diagnosed at the age of, I think it was 11. It was in 1973, I think. But I had symptoms long before then. So, you know, a slightly delayed diagnosis. But when I read all the horror stories about other people's delayed diagnosis, well, it was actually pretty quick. Unfortunately, back then, there wasn't much they could do about it. There really weren't any treatments. How it's affected my life? Well, I would say for the first 10 years, I was mostly ignorant and oblivious. I was a wimpy weakling kid, of course, but I didn't know why. And then probably the next 10 to 15 years were the sort of the hell years when I was in constant pain. It wasn't even really a case of flare-ups. It was a case of one continuous, more or less continuous long flare-up, which just went on and on and on. And it went through, you know, periods where it was so severe, I couldn't get out of bed, I couldn't move, I couldn't walk. I went through a number of different diagnoses, all of which, you know, eventually converged on ankylosing spondylitis. I won't list all the other, all the other diagnoses along the way. Basically got the news that this is a condition that nobody knows how to treat, nobody knows anything about. We can give you NSAIDs for pain and for inflammation, and that's all we can do, really. You can take steroids, but you know, there are some serious risks, and there's really nothing else besides that. So I kind of resigned myself to the fact that I was going to be living my whole life with constant pain. And I rebelled at the idea of not being able to do anything, the inactivity that it enforced on me. And so I became quite active in everything that I was able to force myself to do, whether it was, you know, pushing through the pain, or, you know, on those rare days when the pain wasn't as bad, but I just took every opportunity I could to be active.
So was there, this is a question I think is really interesting. Was there a moment that you were like, I'm not going to continue to be inactive, or do you know what flipped that switch for you?
Actually, I was very lucky because that moment came very early, and I think that was good. I know exactly when that moment was. That moment was when the doctors who were treating me, and I had a whole I had a whole cadre of doctors because I was a research patient. I was being studied. And they more or less collectively told me that I could expect a sedentary lifestyle, that I shouldn't push myself. I shouldn't Now, that might sound like terrible advice looking back on it, but back in the 1970s, that really was the advice that they gave AS patients.
Right.
And when I got that advice was actually the thing that pushed me to reject that advice. It was the prospect of a sedentary lifestyle did not, it set off alarm bells and made me make a very conscious decision that, you know, my life is going to be one of activity one way or another, even if it kills me.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's, it's a really important moment. And I think we're still finding out, right? Well, you were diagnosed before HLA V27 was even a thing, right?
Actually, more or less the same year. I think 1973 was the same year.
Okay.
I learned that I was HLA B27 positive in those very early years. It might have even been the exact same year they discovered the mutation. I don't know, but okay. Certainly, it was. I was one of the first people to find out that that's what I had.
Yeah, well, I bet it's. I've talked to a few people who were diagnosed that year, and it's very interesting that. Their journeys, depending on their age. But so once you decided to get physical, if you will, when did you get into powerlifting?
Oh, much, much, much later. We're talking, let's see, that was in the 1970s. I got into powerlifting in 2016-ish, 15, 16, 17, somewhere around about there.
Okay.
So a whole lifetime later. There were many, many small stages along the way to get me there. It wasn't
okay.
It wasn't something I just set out to go and do.
And in between was like were you a runner or?
I've never been a runner. I don't know if everybody has this experience or not, but my experience was with my joint involvement. Which, by the way, although I did have SI joint and, you know, lower back involvement, that was relatively minor compared to my peripheral joints. I've always had much more problems with my peripheral joints than my large, you two, huh?
Yeah.
One of the things I realized very early on was that the most painful, unbearable thing for me was impact. Like running is hell because it's a high impact sport. It's really hard on your joints. Now, some people with AS are able to do it. Well, I take my hat off to them. I can't. But I grew up on a mountain and I loved mountain climbing and hiking and anything to do with the outdoors. So I've always been very active in that respect. And when I was able to drag myself back onto the mountain after, you know, that was really one of the first things. I lived in a very hilly town on the slopes of a mountain. So I got myself a job as a newspaper delivery boy on my bicycle.
Oh my God.
Which, so it's a hilly That's town. Nuts. I had a single speed bike. I had AS. And I had a big, heavy pile of newspapers, and somehow I managed to fake my way through that, you know, starting with, you know, pushing the bike up all the hills and, you know, carrying half the load of newspapers at a time and doing it in two installments and, you know, that sort of thing. And eventually working my way up to the point where I was able to do that.
Yeah, mind over matter.
Yeah. And then... As I got into my, you know, late teens, really more into my 20s, I started to see an improvement. I was still in pain every day, but it wasn't constant excruciating pain. You know, it was like I would have bad flare-ups, but in between flare-ups, I had, you know, just constant pain, but not unbearable. I learned to deal with it. And that gave me the ability to become much more active. And so, you know, I started to do other things. I started to ride bike and, well, I'd already started, but, you know, actually seriously put some miles on.
Yeah.
I became a rower. I'm telling you stories pretty far out of order because the rowing actually came many years after that. But I got involved in skydiving.
Oh, God. I was just talking about this last night. That and skiing are my two no-nos.
Yes, and in fact, I got into skiing much later as well. But you know, just basically just doing whatever I could.
Yeah.
I was never interested in or capable of participating in team sports, ball games, that sort of thing. I say not capable of just because of joint impact. I couldn't take joint impact. And also I was not interested in them.
And the rowing, I recently went back to rowing and I'm not like a great rower.
But I forget
how low impact it is.
Yes.
And it really does work your whole body. And I find for me, it's good for that, like bringing your sternum up. So, okay. So, tell us what your family thought when you decided to start powerlifting, or was it a slow burn into that?
It was definitely a slow burn into that because I went through a lot of other activities along the way and other gym and powerlifting, gym and weightlifting type of exercises before I got into powerlifting. But when I did, my family, my wife, Joy, she's wonderful. She was very supportive. And in fact, we were both lifting weights in the gym before I got into powerlifting. You know, when I say lifting weights, I mean, you know, sort of casually for strength training. And when I went into powerlifting and started competing, she followed me into the sport and she does it as well. She's a two-time brain tumor survivor, so she has her own challenges. And she's very enthusiastic about it. And she was so supportive and still is. As for other family, I have no other family living nearby, but I have family all over the world. I've got two brothers and a sister in England, and my mom lives in Cape Town. And between my remote family and my a large cadre of friends and supporters who I sort of stay in touch with through live streaming contests and, you know, chat groups while the contest is going on, and that's the sort of thing, I feel as though I've got this huge support community, which even though I may be competing all alone at a contest without having a coach or anybody there on the spot to support me, I've got a lot of support from family and friends.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because it's, and sometimes people do think you're nuts. I've had people ask
they
me,
may
like,
be right
do
too.
Do that? I've been asked a lot if I'm nuts. So maybe it's just, what is your max weight?
In deadlift, 230.5 kilograms, which is a little shy of 510 pounds.
Wow.
I've done a little more than that in the gym, but that's the maximum I've ever done at a contest.
Okay.
In squat, I've occasionally gone up to about 220 kilograms, but usually, well, my contest best is to date is only about 205 and a half, I think. So, you know, about 450s in the pounds.
And that's like
squat is with a bar on your back, and you basically go down and bend your knees until your butt is close to the ground, and then you stand up again. And then the third lift that is done in powerlifting is bench press. That's where you're laying on your back on a bench and you lower the bar until it touches your chest and you push it out. And that is my worst, always has been my worst lift. And I think my competition best for that is only 120 kilograms, which is like 260 something pounds, I think.
Okay. Well, you're getting extra zeros compared to where I could ever get. So like for most people, was there like a day you were like, oh, I think I'm going to get into powerlifting, or it was just gradual in the gym?
It wasn't gradual, really. It actually, there was a day like that. They were really, well, before I tell you about that, I'm going to tell you about a different breakthrough in the gym. Because there were really two events that happened in the gym that I consider to be very significant breakthroughs. And the first one was long before powerlifting. And that was, I was working out at the gym for just sort of for routine health and strength training, you know, not to pursue any particular sport, just to lift, and I had a coach, the guy's name's Brett, very good coach. And he understood AS better than any coach I've ever had. He actually got it. His thing was he pushed me in every direction. Whether it was weight training, load bearing, stepping exercises, ropes, pushing, pulling, whatever it was, what he went for was diversity in the movement. And that was just wonderful because, you know, it's hard to train yourself to do that because you got to think of everything. But when you got a good coach who's pushing you, that really works. And at the same time, he recognized my weaknesses with the AS. And one of the things that I would do, of course, is like everybody does when they're in the gym, I would step up onto a box and step off again, you know, stepping exercises and jumping on and jumping off. And, you know, sometimes I would land badly and I'd have this intense pain because one of my involved joints is my left ankle and my left foot in general. And, once or twice I got just sudden debilitating pain in my SI joints. But Brett kept pushing me. And one day I got to the point where jumping on and off a box was routine. It was something I could just do. And it wasn't especially more challenging for me than for anybody else. And that doesn't sound like a big deal. I mean, the box was probably only about 18 inches off the ground or something. But for me, that was absolutely huge. That was one of the turning points in my journey towards, you know, getting physically healthy again.
Yeah.
And that was probably in the early 2000s. That was probably about, 2004 or 5 or something. The other turning point, and once again, I owe it to a good coach. The other turning point was in around 2016, I think it was. I joined up in a different gym because my wife and I had moved to a different city. And I chanced to run into a coach who was a bodybuilder. And he was, he was one of these crazy overbuilt bodybuilders who you could definitely see that's what he did.
Sure.
And he was strong as anything. And he kind of took me on as a pet project. He just kind of saw me as getting reasonably healthy, but still very limited with my motion. And he decided he was going to see if he can really make me strong. And because he specialized in strength training, it wasn't just general training, it was strength training specifically. He just kept adding pounds to the plates. He just kept adding more and more plates to the bar. Every time I could manage something, he added more. And one day I found out that I could deadlift more weight than he could. And he was a professional bodybuilder. So that was the point at which I realized maybe I should think about this as a sport. But I didn't want to, and I never will want to become a bodybuilder. That's not what I do. That's more of an aesthetic sport. I'm into the strength, not the physique appearance so much.
Yeah.
And Dominic sort of tried to bully me into becoming a bodybuilder, and he started talking about, oh, well, I'm going to teach you how to pose and all that sort of thing. And so I needed an exit ramp. I needed a way to get his mind off of turning me into a bodybuilder. So I said, what if I just enter a powerlifting contest? You can coach me to do powerlifting. That's kind of strength training too. That'll do. And that the rest is all history. I entered a powerlifting contest. Wow. And another and another and another. And within a year, I had a state record. Within 2 years, I had a national record. Within 3 years, I had a world record.
That's amazing. And I've not achieved nearly what you've achieved. And I think most people have not. But I'd love to hear from any listeners who have, because those would be really exciting.
I've seen some of these interviews in this interview series, and there are some amazingly accomplished people.
It's amazing. And I mean, and I remember, so I had never been somebody who ever went to the gym. I remember going to Jazzercise as a kid and I did some mm-hmm. yoga, but I started in the gym like in 2017. And I remember not being able to, like, I would come home and I would be in a flare from like 5 pound dumbbells. Mm-hmm. And then you move up and you move up and you move up yeah. and you move up. And I paused way before you, but I remember they tried to get me on that box to jump. And I was like, no way. I was like, not doing it. So maybe you're inspiring me.
There's a tough decision you make every single day, a dozen times a day when you're in the gym. And that is when to push yourself, push through the pain and carry on, and when to respect the pain and back off.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody on planet Earth can give you any good advice about when to do that. It's got to be your own judgment call.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely, I've made bad judgments some days, and I'm sure.
Oh, I have too.
So was that turning point like your favorite moment of powerlifting, or what's been your favorite moment since?
There've been so many, but I really do have to single out one, and that was in 2021. And I was competing in the US National Championships for the second time. And I broke the world record for deadlift in my category, which at the time was men 55 to 59, classic raw, under 100 kilograms. And it was such a good feeling for two reasons. One was because it had been a very specific goal I set myself about 18 months earlier and worked single-mindedly towards, and suddenly it happened, you know?
Yeah.
And you only get so many opportunities to do that because you can only set world records at national and world contests. And it was a wonderful feeling. And I've done other things that on paper are more impressive since then, but none of them come close to that feeling.
That moment.
The other reason that moment was good is because once in a while, very rarely, an athlete has a day when things just feel right. Everything just comes together. And that was one such day. You know, it just, things just worked, you know.
I can't
explain it, but it just, you know, it was like everything I did that day was easy. It's never been easy before or since, but that day it was.
That's amazing. And like in a day-to-day, what do you do for training when you're not competing?
I'll start by giving you the idealized version, and I'll skip the part about when I goof off and when I don't listen to my own better judgment. I train usually 5 to 6 days a week, occasionally 7, but usually 6. I am at the moment, I'm self-coached. I no longer have a coach ever since COVID. Because of COVID, I kind of had to break with having an in-person coach, and a lot of people adopted telecoaching, remote coaching using video and Skype and that sort of thing. I did not. I just decided to coach myself from that point on. And I have my own gym. My wife and I have our own gym in the basement, and we both train at home. She has a remote coach, by the way, who's in Canada. So that's, you know, that actually does work. Five or six days a week, I concentrate very heavily on the big three lifts: squat, bench press, and deadlift. I'm just telling you what I do. I'm not telling you what good advice is, because good advice would be to spend more time working on auxiliary lifts, variations, that sort of thing. And I do spend some time on those, but not as much as I should, and not as much as I would if I had a competent coach rather than myself. but nonetheless, I spent a lot of time on the big three lifts, and I sort of follow a program. There are all kinds of programs about progressions of weight and cycles that you move through, where you move from volume to lower volume to higher loading and so on over the course of weeks and months in your training. And I try to follow something a little bit like that, although I'm very ill-disciplined, so I don't follow it very closely. Sometimes I just do what I feel like doing.
Somehow I think you hold yourself... You hold yourself to a higher standard than maybe you should.
I try.
You're not ill-disciplined. And like when you wake up and you don't want to get out of bed, or I do it when I don't want to pull the covers off at 5:32 a.m., what keeps you motivated?
Well, my dog wants to be taken outside.
Got it.
So and then I'm up, so I might as well make some coffee. And then once I've made some coffee, you know, I can't sit around with coffee on an empty stomach. So I have to have some breakfast, and, you know, one thing leads to another.
And then you end up in the gym.
Yeah. Although sometimes I don't lift in the gym until the evening. You know, I sometimes go.
Okay. Through,
I used to be very strict about always lifting first thing in the morning. And that was mostly when I had a coach who I had to sync schedules with. Now that I'm self-coached, I'm a little bit more lax about that. But actually, I probably should go back to always lifting in the morning. It really worked well for me when I did it.
I only do it because I'm too lazy at night, like in terms of exercise. Sometimes I do. I used to. And so do you think that you train differently, or that having ankylosing spondylitis has influenced the way you train over others?
Of course, I've never lifted without it, and I've never done anything without ankylosing spondylitis, so I don't really have a comparison. But when I look at other people, I think most of the elite lifters that I see who are, you know, lifting in national and world level, they are much more focused on auxiliary lifts than I am. I tend to do big three lifts. And variations, and a lot of the auxiliary lifts and variations I cannot do, simply because, you know, not because of pain or anything, but simply because of range of motion. Because I started off with all this inflammation at a very young age when my body was still growing. Yeah. I've got joints that have no motion and all they're fused together. And they're at certain angles, and what you see is what you get. You don't. So in terms of doing variations of the exercise, a lot of things that would seem simple, I just cannot do. For example, everybody who lifts weights loves to be able to do a strict curl, right? I mean, it's good for the biceps and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't do a strict curl because I can't bend my wrist to the angle that's needed to do it. I don't care if it's 5 pounds or 1 pound, I can't do it. I simply can't hold the bar in that way.
Interesting.
So I have a much more limited set of lifts that I can do. And then I have to think about small variations I can do to help out, you know, in ways that might be other people would be going to an auxiliary lift of some sort.
And do you do any smaller muscle training, like Pilates or yoga or anything?
I don't, but I probably should. My wife is an aspiring Pilates instructor. She's actually halfway through the process of qualifying to become a Pilates instructor. And she took me into the studio one day and used me as a guinea pig for her. Basically, she was studying adaptive Pilates, where you account for people who have, shall we say, non-standard bodies. It was quite fun and interesting to go through doing Pilates work and seeing how I could adapt to it. And I might go back into that sometime. I might not. I'm not sure.
Yeah. In general, I think men don't get as excited about Pilates as women.
The other main source of my exercise really is walking and hiking. Joy and I love to hike, and we do volunteer hikes for the Forest Service. And so we're quite active in the mountains. And at times when we've been even more active, we've done things like hiking segments of the Colorado Trail and the Inca Trail and so on. So we've done a lot of that.
Amazing.
I cannot run, so I walk, you know.
Yeah.
I can't run because of impact, so I walk.
And do you... like if someone listening was going to start out with maybe not powerlifting, but if they were,
yeah,
or other like goals around athletics or sports, do you have any advice?
What's that Nike slogan? Just do it. My advice would be activity is always better than no activity. But I don't pretend I know what AS does to your body. It's different to every single one of us. And there are times when you can push through the pain and there are times when you have to just back off. And I can never answer that question for anybody else. But in my case, I've always chosen to push through if I possibly can, if it doesn't kill me. I feel a lot healthier for having done it.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. So let's talk just for a minute about you have done some very generous things in fundraising for SAA. What inspired you to do that?
Well, first and foremost, it was my wife, Joy. She suggested it. And being a typical husband, the suggestion went in one ear and out the other ear for a while, but eventually, why not? You know, it gives me a sort of a sense of purpose for my powerlifting. And I can use the fact that I'm doing something very unusual in combination with a very unusual condition to do some good. So why not? So at that point, I'd never heard of the SAA. So I poked around on the internet and found the SAA. And I said, well, this seems like a good organization to raise funds for. It's worthy of support. So I just called up and offered my services, and that's how it is. I now do all my competitions wearing a singlet with an SAA logo and barcode on the front, so that I think we've brought in some money that way.
I love it. And you just finished one last week, yes?
Correct. The IPL World Championships, it was in Las Vegas last weekend.
Third overall, right?
Well, third in my category. I mean, bear in mind that because there are many different age categories and different weight categories, being third doesn't necessarily mean you're the third person out of all the hundreds of people there, but I was the third in my category.
Well, congratulations.
Bronze medal.
I think that's pretty impressive. And you've got a few coming up in 25, and people can find it on SAA's website. Raising the bar.
Raising the bar for spondylitis is the name of the fundraiser. It's a click or two away from the SAA's front webpage, or if you just type that into the Google engine, it'll pretty much take you straight there.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. We appreciate it, and I appreciate your commitment. So what's next in life and powerlifting?
I don't know. in powerlifting, I think it's more of the same, really, because you're shooting for a moving target. Even if you're only going after breaking your own records, well, you can keep getting them higher and higher. But there's also other opponents, very strong opponents. I would like to win the world championship again. Only one at once. The second win would be great. But boy, I'm up against some real tough people, and they don't have AS, so it puts me at a bit of a disadvantage. I would like to regain some of the world records that I've lost. I had four at one stage, and two of them have since been broken by others, so I'd like to go back after those. At one point, I held the world record for squat in my category, and to regain that now, I would have to squat somewhere of the order of about 500 pounds. So it's going to be a tough challenge, but maybe that's what I can train for this year. It's just some more of the same. And then we'll see what happens. I don't know.
I love it. Did we miss anything? Yeah, I know we're coming to an end of our time together. Did I miss anything?
I'm not sure. I can't think of anything. You seem to be pretty thorough.
Yes, well, I told you I have lots of questions all the time. well, thank you so much. I guess, do you have like a mantra or like something that inspires you, like a phrase?
A phrase that inspires me. Oh, put me on the spot, will you?
I do that.
You can cut this question out because I don't have any words of wisdom to share.
No words of wisdom. Okay. Just keep going. You're amazing. How's that?
Just keep going. You're amazing.
All right.
I once found a piece of paper with that on it, and uh-huh. like in the middle of the street, and it has stayed with me forever. Well, Derek Sherlock, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on killing it with ankylosing spondylitis and all of your achievements. We really appreciate all you do for us.
Oh, thank you very much.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.